Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is Wally Stocker, the lead guitarist for the legendary British rock group The Babies. Wally's distinct style, reminiscent of Paul Kossoff of Free, gave The Babies a distinct, recognizable sound. That sound has found its way back home with the reforming of The Babies. When The Babies disbanded in 1981, Wally toured with Rod Stewart and Air Supply, as well as Humble Pie, featuring Jerry Shirley, Jimmy Barnes, and Zoomer. Wally recently made the cross-country move from Florida back to California, and we welcome him back with open arms and huge smiles. With Les Paul in hand and trusty Marshall Stack at his back, Wally is back where he belongs. The Babies are a rock group best known for their songs, Isn't It Time and Every Time I Think of You. Both songs reached number 13 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart in the late 1970s. The 1976-78 Babies lineup consisted of keyboardist, guitarist Michael Corby, vocalist, bassist John Waite, drummer Tony Brock, and of course, guitarist Wally Stocker. After Corby left the band in August 1978, a replacement was sought, and the company brought in two musicians, Jonathan Cain as keyboardist and Ricky Phillips to take over at bassist. From 1979 until the breakup in 1981, The Babies lineup consisted of vocalist Waite, drummer Brock, bassist Phillips, guitarist Stocker, and keyboardist Cain. After the breakup, John Waite went on to produce a major solo hit, Missing You, and continues to be a solo artist today. Jonathan Cain left to join Journey. John Waite, Jonathan Cain, and Ricky Phillips formed Bad English in the late 1980s. Ricky Phillips currently plays for Styx. Wally Stocker and Tony Brock together and separately worked with Rod Stewart and other mainstream artists, including Elton John, Air Supply, Keith Urban, and Humble Pie. In late 2012, auditions were held to find suitable replacements for the departed members. Joining original Babies Tony Brock and Wally Stocker are John Bisaha, lead vocalist and bassist, and Joey Sykes on guitars. The new lineup have played numerous shows over the past year to great crowds and reviews while pushing forward with new music to be brought to the Babies fans, who have been sorely neglected low these many years. The new album, I'll Have Some of That, was released worldwide on June 24th of 2014. Joining the Babies on stage are the Babettes, Holly Bisaha and Elisa Chadbourne, along with keyboardist Francesco Saglietti and Brian Johnson. The band is about to release a new video for Not Ready to Say Goodbye very soon. The Babies bring a full sound and look that has not been seen on the scene in many years. It is my great pleasure to welcome Wally Stocker, great guitarist from The Babies, to the Ray Shasho Show. Thank you, Wally, for being on the show today.
Hi, Ray. Thank you for having me on your show.
Lots of Wally's on my show lately. Wally Palmer of the Romantics is on the show this coming Monday, and now Wally Stocker of The Babies.
Yeah.
I love it. You live in California now, but you did live in Florida, is that right?
Yes, I did. I spent about 12 years down in Florida. Went down there, moved from Los Angeles to Southern Florida around 1999, and spent 12 years down there. It it was a change of pace for sure going down there from California. We actually went down there for family reasons, and you know, it was I had a tough time of it to begin with, because you know, I'd left all my musical friends behind in California and really didn't know anybody in Florida. So you know, the music scene's quite different down there in South Florida, and not a lot of rock and roll going on. So, you know, I was sort of messing around with a few bands and a few projects, but nothing that really took off. And I was getting a little disappointed, thinking that maybe, you know, my musical career might be sort of slowly grinding to an end. And but I would speak with Tony Brock, you know, and, you know, we would always sort of discuss, you know, maybe getting the band back together again. And we would occasionally approach John Waite and, you know, ask him if maybe he would be interested in maybe teaming up with us again. And you know, he was quite happy doing his, you know, his solo project, and he would always sort of decline our invitation. So after a few attempts at that, trying to convince him to maybe give it another shot with us, Tony called me up and said, listen, you know, what if we, you know, look for a new singer to replace John Waite? Would you be interested? He said, you know, I'm not gonna bother unless you are, you know, 100% in behind it and fully committed. And I said, well, yeah, let's give it a shot. You know, I'm committed. I'll give it 100%, as long as we can find the right singer. And that's when the whole thing really, you know, got started. With Tony getting the ball rolling here in California. Mm-hmm. And he started auditions and would send me videotapes. He would have singers come in and they would sing to, you know, just backing tracks of maybe Every Time I Think of You or Isn't It Time or Head First. And Tony would video it and then he would send those down to me in Florida. And you know, we discussed these different singers over the phone, and then you know, that probably took a couple of months, and then he called me one day and he said, you know what, I think we may have found the guy. I'm going to send you all the info on him. And so when I see it and heard his voice, and I said, yeah, I think we're definitely onto a winner here, you know. So Tony brought back John Bazzaha probably four or five different times after that. And, you know, and John, you know, just fit in, you know, exactly what we were looking for. Not only as a singer and as a bass player, but, you know, as, you know, for his personality as well, you know, and his attitude. Right. He was a big fan of the Babies long before we ever met him. And so he grew up on our music. And, you know, he kind of had the passion for the band. And he had the Babies in his blood, yeah, you know, from years before. So yep. It was a fine catch as far as we were concerned, you know.
Well, John was a great choice. I think he's got a hell of a voice, and I think he meshes very, very well with the band to take it to another chapter. And I was very happy with the album. He's got, like I said before, he's got an excellent voice. He's kind of got a lot of the songs to me. I don't know if you agree or not. I kind of felt a little bit of vintage Foreigner, you know, in his voice, a little bit of Lou Graham, you know. Which is great, you know, because Lou Graham was a legendary performer. So,
oh yeah, I know that Lou is one of John's favorites. You know,
really?
I know, you know, and so is John Waite. You know, John Bazaar has told me many times that, you know, he's been a big fan of John Waite's voice and, you know, his whole approach to singing. But he has named Lou Gramm as, you know, a favorite singer. And so, you know, and Steve Perry and singers like that. So,
right.
You know, I think that's where he kind of, you know, where you're hearing that kind of influence in his voice, you know?
Yeah. Well, Wally, first of all, I just want to say I'm so sorry to hear about the passing of your wife, Susan. I understand that she was a very strong advocate for animal rights, which I am as well. And in her name, you know, I saw it on the website, if people can just, you know, donate in the name, her name, maybe to animal rights, you know, activities and companies and things like that. But
that would be wonderful.
Yeah, how was she, you know, in tune with animal rights? Was how much of an advocate was she? And have you guys, I don't know, toured areas where they, you know, to help animals that are, you know, being slaughtered and those types of things? Or how was she involved?
Well, she was very involved with all those different associations and, you know, animal rights and those kind of things, you know. She loved animals of all kinds and, you know, she would, you know, she would see all these different, you know, associations on Facebook and immediately respond, you know, so yeah, she was fully committed to that. You know, that was one of the charms that she had, you know. It was really, you know, just caring for animals of all kinds and, you know, all over the world, really. You know, there was, she was.
Well, the animals need our help for sure because they don't have a voice, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, how's the tour been? You got more U.S. dates coming up. I see you have some new dates. Let's see, the 26th, you'll be in Wilmington, North Carolina. You'll be in Winston-Salem on the 27th. You've got Redondo Beach coming up in September. You've got Westland, is that Michigan? Westland, Michigan, up in I think that's in September.
Yeah,
and you're playing with some really cool bands. You'll be playing with the Jefferson Starship and Ambrosia coming up as well.
Yes, Jefferson Starship next week, and a couple of shows with them. Of course, I guess we'll be done with those by the time you air this.
probably.
And then Ambrosia and you know, a couple of our own shows. Things are good. We actually played, we did Rock in the Rivers in Montana, a festival a couple of years ago now. And the day we were on, Jefferson Starship were on the same day as we were, and so were April Wine. And so we're kind of, you know, kind of friends with the Jefferson Starship, and it'd be nice to see them again.
Yeah.
We haven't played with Ambrosia before, but... you know, so that's going to be a new experience, but I'm sure things are going to go well.
Good man.
So, you know, we're trying to add some more dates as we go along.
Good.
You know, because that's what we need to do. We need to get out there and play, you know.
Yeah. What about going abroad? Because, you know, the like European audiences, Amsterdam, Japan, those guys are probably, I hate to say this, a little bit more more of, you know, rock fanatics from, you know, the classic rock bands. They're very faithful. And they still act like, you know, like if you guys were brand new, you know. So are you going to be visiting those, you know, a few countries out there?
We would sure like to. I don't see that happening this year now.
Right.
You know, it seems like this year is just flying by anyway, you know. And I mean, here we are in August already, you know.
I know.
I feel like I you know, I was only taking down the Christmas decorations. And so, you know, things are moving fast this year. But hopefully, you know, in the very near future, for sure. You know, back when we first started this, you know, in the earlier days, we were very popular over in Japan and
right.
Hong Kong and the Philippines. You know, they just they loved us over there. You know, mm-hmm. there was mob scenes when we would go over there. You know, it kind of took us by surprise the first time we went. You know, I mean, arriving at the airport and you walk out of the departure door and there's thousands of screaming young girls, you know, and after a sort of 14-hour flight, it kind of took everybody by surprise, you know, but they loved it. So, yeah, it would be great to be able to go back to those kind of places with the new band, you know.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they mobbed you again, because that's the way they are. If they find out you guys reformed, you know, and start touring over there, I'm sure it's going to happen again. That's, you know, they're that kind of fan, you know.
Yeah, well, bring it on. I'm ready for it.
Bring it on. you know, the Babies. There's a Japanese indie rock band called the Babies. Did you know that?
I did see, I think it was Tony that showed me a video of them.
Uh-huh.
Are they all females?
I'm not sure. I did.
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I may have seen like a YouTube clip of them. I'm not sure if they spell it the same way as we do, because, you know, we don't have the apostrophe S and we don't have the plural, you know. I mean, that was when we first got the name, you know, we wanted to sort of spell it that way just so that it would stand out a little more, you know.
But when the when you guys broke up in 81, was there any truth to considering Glenn Hughes to replace John Waite? Was he ever considered?
Well, his name was bounced around, yeah.
Right.
You know, it was all, you know, when we did break up, everybody kind of went their own way, you know, and Jonathan found himself in Journey, which mm-hmm. I knew was going to happen because we had just toured with Journey for about 14 weeks. And I knew they had their eye on him because we all knew that Greg Rowley was going to be leaving Journey at the end mm-hmm. of that tour.
Yep.
So that didn't surprise me one bit, you know. And then Ricky was working with Belinda Carlisle and the Motels. And then he finally got himself a nice little gig with Styx. And Tony went in the studio and... with Rod Stewart and was doing some sessions with Rod, and then Rod took Tony on as his sort of full-time drummer. And, you know, and I was kind of left sort of just bouncing off the walls there for a while in L.A. and not knowing what to do with myself. And, you know, and then I got a call from Tony asking me if I would be interested in auditioning for Rod. Rod was about to go out on a North American tour.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary, the third guitar player in Rod's band, didn't want to do the tour. And I think he had just had a new addition to the family and didn't want to go back out on the road. And
right.
Anyway, I ended up auditioning with Rod, actually in his garage, in his LA mansion. and he moved all his cars out, and we rehearsed in there. And I ended up getting that job, so which was great. I kind of knew the guys in the band anyway. And of course, Tony was the drummer, and so him and I got to play together again for a while. And so that was exciting. So, you know, everything kind of calmed down as far as the babies breaking up, because everybody had sort of landed on their feet, you know?
Right. Well, not a bad gig playing with Rod Stewart, huh?
No. Oh, it was fun time. Fun time.
Oh, yeah.
There's no other band out there like the Rod Stewart band. I mean, they're all, you know. But like I say, you know, I knew most of them anyway. So it was, you know, playing for Rod is, you know, you've got to be on your toes because, you know, it doesn't matter if you've got a set list in front of you. There's always a night when you turn around and say, well, I don't want to do that one tonight. You know, let's do something else. Let's do this one.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, God, we haven't played that one for about 2 or 3 weeks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but all in all, that was a really fun time, you know.
Well, I admire you guys that go from one band to another band and have to learn a whole new set list. You know, that's incredible. I give you guys a lot of credit because it's not that easy. You know, especially when you're playing for, you know, like a legend like Rod Stewart, because, you know, and some of these guys can be perfectionists. I know a lot of guys that played with Frank Zappa, and he was, oh my God, if you didn't, you know, if you screwed up too many times, you're out of the band. You know.
Yeah.
So
well, you know, Rod has such a vast catalog of songs, you know, it was a question of sort of trying to, you know, at least know, you know, not every song, but, you know, have a decent idea on how it goes, because you never know when he's going to spring it on you, you know.
Exactly. The band's about to release a new video, right, for Not Ready to Say Goodbye?
Yes, we're at the finishing touches on that now, actually, because originally that was the first song that we wrote as, you know, the reformed babies, if you like, with the new lineup, and you know, the song is basically about the fans and the band, you know, not ready to say goodbye, you know, so we sort of. That was kind of like the first song that we wrote when we reformed, and you know, it was put out as a single on iTunes, but it really wasn't promoted, and we had no video to go with it, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle, you know, and which was kind of disappointing, because, you know, we were really pumped up on that song, and you know, it we had recaptured the sound of the babies like it was, you know, in the earlier days, you know, incorporating strings and brass and female singers. And I think it was a really, you know, good example of the babies coming back but not losing that sound, you know, that we were associated with.
Right.
And, you know, with media these days, there was no video to accompany it, and then when we made I'll Have Some of That, when that was all finished and mixed, we never put that single on the new CD.
Right.
And so we released I See You There from the CD as a single, and that you know, we made a video for that, and so we decided that, you know, we didn't want to waste Not Ready to Say Goodbye, so we decided that we would re-release it, but this time have a video with it, you know. So we've been shooting some shows and some, you know, sort of B footage backstage and things like that, and incorporated some old footage from the earlier days, and like I say, it's pretty much done now. We just sort of tweaking it out a little bit, and then we'll be you know, we should be ready to release Not Ready as a single again, but this time with a video.
Well, it's a great song, and I think you're right. Today, you know, YouTube gets the biggest and more hits than anything. You know, people love to go to YouTube and just, you know, and all the Babies classics are on YouTube and getting tremendous response. So I think it's, you know, I think it's the right move. I think it'll do very well because it's a great song.
Yes.
I want to talk about your latest release. I'll have some of that. My statement on this is it's an extraordinary produced gem of would-be classics. I think at least four tracks on the album should be top 40 hits, if only mainstream radio were playing with a full deck. I give it 5 stars all the way. There's absolutely no fluff on the album, and I enjoyed every track. I really, really enjoyed this album. You guys did it. And like I said, it just sounds so, you know, polished. It's a polished album. It really is.
Well, thank you, Ray. We appreciate that. You know, it was a lot of hard work. We had a deadline. We had a deadline of about 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we were really pushing it as far as, you know, we were spending like 14, 16 hours a day on it every day.
Wow.
Because of this window that we had, you know.
Right.
If we couldn't get it out by a certain time, then we would have to wait until later in the year to release it.
Mm-hmm.
So we went all out to make sure that we could get it done. And it was a group effort, you know, but we still, you know, we didn't want to lose the sound. That was, you know, Tony and I had discussed that from the very start, that, you know, we didn't want to come back with a different sound and a different attitude to, you know, so we wanted to, you know, keep our sound and recapture that on the new record. And, in fact, it was recorded at Tony's studios, Silver Dream Studios, and he engineered and produced it. And we moved in an old analog mixing board, an old Soundcraft board, so that we could get that analog sound as opposed to just doing it on a computer and having a digital sound. You know, we wanted...
Good for you.
Well, you know, we wanted to record it the way we used to record.
Exactly.
And you know, it just has that warmth when you do it,
it sure
analog,
did.
You know.
Yep.
Which, you know, allowed us to sort of recapture the sounds that we had in the early days with, you know, a sprinkling of, you know, Joey and John and their ideas and, you know, both being fans, they knew what Tony and I were looking for as far as the sound of the record. And so, like I say, it was a team effort, and but we had a lot of fun doing it. It was a lot of pressure, you know, sometimes you get the best results when you're put on the spot, as opposed to saying, well, just take your time with it, you know, and let us know when it's ready. We were under the gun a bit, and I think that kind of got the best out of all of us, you know?
Well, you know, true rock aficionados like myself are going to love the album, because I don't know what they were talking about when they said the Babies were a teenage pop band. They're nowhere close to being that ever, because you guys really rocked out, you know, and you got some serious rock in a lot of your music. I'm telling you, you know, there's a lot of tracks that remind me of Foreigner, early days, the heyday of Foreigner. Like, you know, Grass is Greener is very 70s rocker. My favorite, I think, is I See You There. It's a great mainstream radio tune. Like I said, if it was back in the heyday of Top 40 and you didn't have any of this dance crap music that's on mainstream radio nowadays, which needs to go away completely. Your guitar is awesome. I think it was you on this track that... It sounded like Brian May a little bit. Was that you? On I See You There?
Yeah. The solo in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Brian May. And I mean, this song to me could be a soundtrack to a movie. That's how good it is. I really, really enjoy that track. Now, who wrote this? I know most of the credits are just credited to the Babies, right?
Yeah. Actually, that was an idea that Joey had brought in.
Uh-huh.
And he had been working on it at home and sort of had a skeleton of a song. And him and John got together and finished off the lyrics. And, I mean, as soon as I heard it, it was like, well, we've got to do that one, you know. You know, I think when Joey first started with the idea, you know, I think he was thinking back to maybe, you know, isn't it time and every time I think of you, and kind of incorporate right. some of those ideas, but bring it up to, the modern age, let's say. And a great song from Joey and John. And, you know, once we sat down with it as a band and arranged it, it really came out, you know, super nice.
Yeah, your guitar skills are, incredible throughout every track as well. And, you know, it just made the album. Another song which I thought was kind of deep, you know, and you know, great lyrics was "These Days."
You
know, I'd rather think about tomorrow. I mean, the lyrics were awesome. Was there a sitar involved in that?
Yes. Yeah, in the middle.
Who played sitar?
We brought in a friend of John's. You know, we didn't have time to sit down and learn how to play a sitar.
Right.
We were pushed for time as it was, you know, and we cut the track, and we wanted to do something a little different in the middle of it. So there's some backwards tape on it.
Yep.
And
a little Beatles-ish there.
Yeah, kind of congas and things going, mm-hmm. You know, these little sort of Indian-type drums. And it was like, you know what, maybe a sitar on this one, you know. And it's like, well, I said to Tony, don't look at me. I don't know my way around the sitar at all, you know. I know what they look like, and that's about it. And and John said, well, I have a friend that actually owns one and can play it. So we invited him over, and there he was, sitting cross-legged in the middle of the studio with mics around him and candles burning. We put the candles out there for him.
Cool.
And we said, you know, just go for it, you know. And after a few takes, you know, after a few ideas were thrown his way, and, we ended up with sitar in the middle of These Days.
Well, it was awesome. Well, you saved money because you didn't have to invite the Shankar family in, so fly them in from India.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Another track on Civil War, another great song with, you know, incredible lyrics. So, the whole album is awesome. I loved it. I think it's a great album for you guys coming back. You know, I think it's equals most of your early stuff. And it's got a lot of new feeling to it as well, which, you know, that's what you want. You want probably a little mixture of your, your original baby stuff plus a new feel, because, you know, you want to move on, too. You know, you don't want to be stuck in the past.
No. But, you know, I think there's a nice variety of songs on there, you know, which is what we've always tried to do with our albums. You know, there's the more sort of commercial... let's say commercial pop rock, but then there's also been some harder songs, you know, Anytime and Love Don't Prove, and, you know, so as John would call them, deep tracks, you know.
Deep tracks, exactly, right.
But the Babies have always had that, you know, always had that side to us, and, you know, in the early days, some people didn't really even know about that, because they were hearing songs like Every Time I Think of You and Isn't It Time on the radio, and kind of, maybe assume that, you know, the rest of the material was like that. But then, of course, when we get them out and, you know, we'd be playing live, then it would open up their eyes as to what we were really all about, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have said the Babies were a lot better than people thought. You know, they were, you guys, exactly what you just said, you know, they're looking for the hits. But if you hear your whole catalog, then you've got so much more. You know, you're just an incredible rock band, you know.
Yeah. Yes, and some, we've always had that harder edge to us, you know.
Well, it's about time you had this album out after 34 years. That's all.
Yeah. It was so exciting when we finally released it, you know, and like I say, we were under a lot of pressure, you know, not only did we have to, you know, sort of arrange the songs, because everybody came in with song ideas, you know,
right.
And we had to really boil it down to from probably, I would say, at least 40 songs that we had between us, and then we had to boil those down to maybe 20 songs, and then, you know, finally the ones that went on the record. So, plus we had to do all the artwork and record the songs,
mm-hmm.
Get them mixed and get them mastered and get all the artwork finished within that 2-month window. So,
yeah.
You know, you know, I'm very proud of the new record. It's, it really, really shows off, you know, not only the new guys, you know, John and Joey, but just, I think it just shows that the Babies are back and they haven't lost their sound. And, hopefully it's onward and upward from here.
I think so. I mean, you know, I used to be critical about bands that, you know, lost a lot of their original players, but there are two bands, I got to say, I look forward to every new album, and that they're back, and I will follow them religiously, and that's The Babies and Foghat. You know, I interviewed Roger recently, and, you know, they took me by surprise, because, of course, Roger's the only original guy, but they just, you know, they're rocking it, man. They're doing a great job with their, you know, moving on and keeping the legacy going. And I think you guys are going to do the same. I really do.
It's funny you should mention Foghat. My friend Charlie Ewan is singing with them now.
Yes, he is.
And he was singing with us when we were in Humble Pie.
That's right.
Yeah. And Jerry Shirley chose Charlie as the singer because Charlie has that texture to his voice,
mm-hmm.
So we could actually pull off the Humble Pie songs, you know. Steve Marriott is, irreplaceable, really. But because of the tone and the texture of Charlie's voice, we were able to enjoy those 2 or 3 years with Humble Pie because, you know, we could actually do the songs and do them well and, you know, with justice to them, you know, and just passion. And and then I lost track of Charlie quite a few years ago now, and then he suddenly popped up with Foghat, you know, who we used to bump. You know, at that time it was Foghat, it was Humble Pie, it was Pat Travers, it was Robin Trower, and we were like all following each other around, you know. We'd play a club one night and then, you know, Foghat would be in the next night. So we got to know all those guys and I just thought I'd throw that in because Charlie was a great friend, hopefully still is, and he deserves to be a front in the band like Foghat because, you know, he really is terrific.
Good band, good, nice guys, really nice guys. You know, they're based out of Orlando, as a matter of fact. And they're and they're really big with their wine now. You know, Roger goes to a lot of wine tasting shows and things like that because of the Foghat wine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So yeah, let's see a Babies Fog Hat concert, you know, tour or something. That'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, another album everyone needs to buy is the Babies Anthology. That's another must for all rock and roll music lovers because it's got all the great tunes from the Babies, plus you know all the deeper cuts. You know, that's another great, great, great album everyone must have. Now, are you guys at this point thinking ahead to another album? Do you have any ideas in mind? Or
well, we've been knocking around a couple of ideas. You know, we've been mainly concentrating on trying to get out there and do some live work. But you know, whenever we rehearse or even at sound checks, you know, some bits and pieces and ideas start flowing, and you know, it's like, you know, just skeletons of ideas, you know, and but it's like, oh, don't forget that idea because you know I really like that, and you know, so. But as far as actually planning another album, not really in the works right now. Although we were kicking around an idea of either a live album or possibly go back in and recut some of the old catalog with the new lineup and you know, revamp those songs. Not sure how that would go over. We'd have to, you know, really kind of get into that and discuss that more, but the possibility of a live album might be intriguing, you know, which obviously incorporates the old catalog, you know. You know, we have to do the old catalog, you know, otherwise
sure, of course.
We wouldn't get out of there alive, you know, if we didn't play those songs. You know,
what about the Babies live in Japan? There you go.
Oh yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea, right? I have to look into that one.
Yeah, bring back more live CDs, live albums, because you know they were big sellers back in the day, and I think you can bring it back. You know?
Oh yeah. Well, Peter Frampton can tell you all about that.
Definitely. You know? Yep.
That helped relaunch his career, and that was just a live album, you know, and just took off like crazy, you know, big, and a double album of that, you know. I mean, he struck gold when he released that one.
Yes, he did.
You're right. You know, when I was younger, I used to love listening to live albums, you know. Humble Pie at the Forum, the Fillmore, and you know, all those at Free Live. I was actually there, part of the audience for the recording of that one. But yeah, they just have a vibe about them, you know, live albums, and so we're looking into, you know, the possibility of maybe doing something like that. But I like your idea, you know. Let's go over to Japan and do the live album over there.
Oh, the audience would be incredible. You know, they'd be screaming all the way through. It'd be like a Beatles concert.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of live albums were made in Japan. I mean, like, you know, Deep Purple, you know, made in Japan. And, you know, Cheap Trick, I guess, did some stuff out there. And they were always successful.
Yeah, live at the Budokan,
Budokan, Cheap Trick. Always successful. I think most of those live albums were done overseas, you know. Maybe a few in Madison Square Garden, but probably, you know, mixed, maybe a couple here and then a couple in Europe, and you know, mixed all over the place. But I think one of my favorite live albums was Uriah Heep when they came out with that live album. That I thought that was pretty cool. That was a good album.
Uriah Heep, wow. I used to go and see them. You know, when I was young and kind of just old enough to, you know, slip in the back door of clubs and things like that, you know, I would see all those bands that went on to be basically your classic rock bands, you know, you know, The Who and the Yardbirds and, you know, Zeppelin. I seen a little club, and there was so many great groups around. Like I said, they became like the classic rock groups of today. Mm-hmm. But of course, back in those days, they were just starting off too, you know, and finding their feet. And you know, sometimes I didn't really know what I was witnessing until years later, and it's like, wow. You know, this band that I see in this little club, you know, they've become mega stars, you know, and rightly so, because, you know, I think in the early days, I know when I was young, every band had their own sort of identity and their own mm-hmm. sound, you know.
Right.
And whether it's the singer or the sound of the band or a combination of both. And... you know, but they were all friends. All these bands all knew each other. So, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't sort of like they were in competition with each other, but you could tell what band it was by the sound, you know, whether it's Deep Purple or whether it was, Led Zeppelin or whether it, you know, whoever it was, they had a distinctive sound, you know. And I find that there's a lot of bands around now, you know, you hear the song on the radio and it's like, which band is that now? It could be a number of, it could be a dozen different bands. I can't quite tell who it is, you know.
And right.
I think in the earlier days, everybody established a sound, you know, the Kinks and the Small Faces and... you know, those kind of bands. So, it was great growing up in London, you know, and being able to see all those bands that were, you know, trying to get their foot in the door, and then, actually being able to witness that was really, I think that's probably what inspired me to, forge ahead and see if I could make some kind of career out of it, you know. I think that was my incentive, you know, my kind of encouragement, if you like, you know.
I admire the Brits so much because, you know, they took American music. You know, they were, you know, everyone I talked to says if it wasn't for American blues, you know, the early blues guys, you know, we wouldn't have had rock and roll. But the Brits took it and expanded with it and gave it its own signature, you know. And then the other thing about the Brits, they gave us progressive rock, you know what I mean? They made that classical rock sound, which nobody ever came up with. And in my opinion, like, you know, people like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I'm not a big fan of, that should be a separate section just for prog rock, because that's, to me, the greatest thing that's ever happened to music, was progressive rock, you know. So I give the Brits a lot of credit, you know, for doing that.
Are we talking about bands like Yes and Genesis and
exactly.
those kind of
bands? Yeah.
Oh yeah, they developed a whole different sort of genre of music, and complete with their own sound, and I mean, technically brilliant players. But you know, it was great to have that diversity in music, you know, you're right, you know, progressive rock really did establish itself in the UK, you know, kind of first, we had Frank Zappa in America and, you know, bands like that, Mothers of Invention.
Mothers of Invention, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we had the other side of it with the melodic, with the, you know, the Beatles and, the Good Boys as opposed to the Rolling Stones, who were the bad boys of rock and roll.
And the Animals.
The Beatles were unstoppable. I mean, they were releasing like,
you know, like a new single every 10 days, you know. I mean, they'd have 9 singles in the top 10 over in Britain, you know.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And some of those songs they wrote like in 5-10 minutes, you know.
They were just turning them out, you know. They were like a runaway train when it came to songs, you know.
Incredible.
And, you know, incredible. Incredible songwriters and, you know, just an incredible sound and, very hard to top that.
You know what I love about the Babies, though? You created your own style, of course, and, you know, like now with the Babettes, the singers in the band really made that the Babies special, you know? It's such a great sound. And I'm glad you guys, you know, kept that going, you know, incorporated that and left that in the band because that's very important, I think.
Yeah.
The Baby sound.
No, we wanted to recapture that sound for sure, you know. In the early days, you know, when we were recording, we were always open to, you know, different instruments on our tracks if they fit the track, you know, whether it be strings or horns, you know, female singers, you name it, you know, we'd try it on a track and if it fit, then it was like, let's keep it. It sounds great. You know, it fits the song and, you know, so we've always liked experimenting with different instruments and with that four sound. And then, you know, and then that kind of leaves room for the deep tracks to be a little more rocky and a little more open and, you know, a little less going on, but still, you know, that grit and that rock flavor to it, you know.
Well, the band is great. The new album is incredible. Wally, do you have anything else you'd like to promote or add? What about a solo album for you? Any collaborations you're thinking about?
No solo album for me right now. I'm too immersed in, you know, what we're doing with the band and, you know, trying to keep that all on track. You know, I don't really sing, so I don't know how an instrumental solo album would really go down at this point. Although I would like to invite, you know, favorite singers. You know, I've often thought about, you know, going back to like a vinyl record and maybe have my favorite female singers on side A and my favorite male singers on side B and write tracks with the different vocalists and
great idea,
you know, have them sing on, you know, on, you know, what would officially be the Wally Stocker solo album, but with guest singers, you know. I'd love to get like Tina Turner on there and female singers like that, you know, or Paul Rogers or, Paul McCartney. I mean, the list is endless, really, you know.
Well, Wally, I expect that album in, I'll give you 3 months. How's that? Artwork and everything, complete in 3 months. Well, Wally, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure, and for all the incredible music you've given us. Good luck on the tour, and eventually, please come to Tampa Bay. That's where I am. You remember Tampa, that area. I'm in Sarasota, but Tampa Bay is actually a great hub for music. I know South Florida might not be, but Tampa Bay's got a lot of dedicated fans on. So we hope to see you in Tampa Bay soon as well.
All right. Yeah. We'd love to come back down there as well.
And remember,
for sure.
The Babies live in Japan.
Yeah,
I like the sound of that.
I'll give you all the credit, Ray.
Don't
panic.
I appreciate that. Wally, thank you so much again for being on the show, and we look for great things from the Babies.
All right, Ray. Well, I appreciate you having me on the show. I really did enjoy this.
I did too.
Okay. Well, okay. You take care now.
You too.
We'll
cheers.
We'll speak soon.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Purchase the baby's most recent release entitled I'll Have Some of That at Amazon.com. Visit the baby's official website at www.thebabiesofficial.com for tour dates and the latest information about the band. Visit the babies on Twitter, https://twitter.com/tweetthebabies. Very special thanks today to Jen Mitchell, PR for the babies, for arranging this interview. And, of course, to the great Doug and Don Newsom with VBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Coming up next, the legendary British film director and author Tony Palmer will discuss his latest project, The Beatles and World War II. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552. Or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, available now at Amazon.com. And believe me, you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.